The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, the biggest and the best in sports coming your way at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, over the next 2 hours. And we have always got you covered on Friday nights. We are going to open things up with a Final Four recap this evening, and we're going to feature one of the elite teams that advanced to the biggest stage. Many, myself included, we projected would win it all. But unfortunately for the Florida Gators and that epic 30-game winning streak, it all came crashing down into an end as the Gators finished the season with a loss to UConn. Struggled mightily. If you watch the game, they struggled mightily to the Huskies, and they had that 10-point loss. So we have invited back to our show. We are headed straight to Florida. Buddy Martin of WOCA Radio in North Central Florida. He is the host of the Buddy Martin Show. Buddy, it's been way too long. Spring is here. It's so good to have you back with us tonight. Thank you.
Wonderful to be back and talk to you again. It has been a while, and we've got a lot to catch up on.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover because last time you were on the show, we were talking college football. We want to get the pulse on that eventually. But right now, we're going to focus our attention on just the special season Billy Donovan and his Gators had. I mean, it really was an incredible run. The roster was comprised of six seniors, four of them starters. I personally, Buddy, I thought they would win it all. They were my favorite. What was your evaluation of the game and the takeaways after they had that loss to UConn?
Well, there's so much to say. It was, unfortunately, a total collapse. And the way it went down was what hurt so bad for Gator fans because they were so emotionally invested. You know, the old joke had been around here now this season since the Gators went on their 30-game win streak and won the SEC and became the first team to be 18-0 in the SEC and then won the tournament, was that the question was, what has Will Muschamp done that Billy Donovan was unable to do? Turned Florida into a basketball school. And basketball, of course, is what it's been about for the last couple of months. Football school, basketball school. Today, maybe you Gator fans might want to go back to being a football school because the way they lost to UConn, taking no credit from the Huskies, who played extremely well, and Shabazz Napier is a wonderful player. But it was a painful defeat, reminiscent to old Gators, of a collapse in the Fiesta Bowl in 1995 by Steve Spurrier's undefeated number one ranked team when they were clobbered by Nebraska.
Ah.
The score, not as bad, but compared to how this team has been playing for so long, maybe overachieving, they picked the wrong time to have their worst game of the year.
Well, you know what's interesting? You were talking about how they really just steamrolled so many quality opponents, especially even in the SEC, a conference that's regarded with some really good basketball. What was your biggest concern in terms of before they headed up to North Texas and into Arlington?
Well, you always worry about injuries, and I'm not ever going to make an excuse because it will be taken away from UConn. I have a distinct feeling that perhaps this team suffered some injuries. I think Scotty Wilbekin was hurt. He was not the same player he has been all season long. He played his worst game of the year. Shot was way off. He couldn't defend. And it was just a very, very unfortunate time for Scotty. I can't prove that because no one will admit to that. They have a good source around the program, which I asked the question, was Wilbekin hurt? And he said, I'm just going to say he wasn't himself. So that was one thing, injuries. The other thing is about this team. When you play a team like UConn, in addition to the fact that they test you at both ends of the court and their guard play is so great, they shoot their free throws extremely well. That's been an Achilles heel for the Florida team all year long, except in recent weeks they had been making their free throws. They fell apart again at the free throw line. I don't think that would have made a difference, but you feared that coming in. The third thing did happen. The offense, when Wilbekin wasn't driving it and Michael Frazier wasn't knocking down his three regularly, had a tendency to go into deep freeze. for an 11-minute period when Billy Donovan had his some non-scorers on the floor, they went to a deep freeze, and that cost them a lot. And I think, matter of fact, it was 11-0 run by it wasn't 11, wasn't 11 minutes, 11-0 run by UConn. So that was costly. So those are the things you think about, and you cross your fingers. This team is like watching a NASCAR race for 30 games. Are they going to go off the track? Are they going to crash and run out of gas? Ultimately, to use the NASCAR metaphor, they ran out of gas against a really good team.
Well, they ran out of gas, but I think depth was truly a concern for me when they went into that. You were talking about, alluded to some of the injuries, and that certainly definitely played out. Hey, Buddy Martin from WOCA Radio in North Central Florida and host of the Buddy Martin Show is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We always love when you connect with us. Join us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. And my dear Buddy, I tell all the listeners tonight nationally where they can go and they can connect with you too.
WOCA.com. Every weekday at 5 o'clock with your Buddy Martin sports page. Love to have you listen sometime.
And we'd love for them to follow you on Twitter, too. What's your Twitter handle, Buddy?
That would be just Buddy Martin at Twitter.com.
All righty. So, unfortunately for the Gators, they were unable to achieve the ultimate goal and to win another national championship. But really, I think you said it best. You have to give the Huskies credit. When I started looking at the score sheet, just the execution defensively, I mean, they really locked down the paint, especially even from the perimeter. I mean, the Gators were only 1 of 10 from three-point range and 38% field goal percentage shooting that night, too.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job on defense. Their guard play was sensational. But DeAndre Daniels, the guy you didn't hear that much about, a little bit, he's the guy that really ripped them up with those three-point shots. Florida goes out and goes up 16-4. That's the Florida team I've been expecting to see for a long time. You're a golfer. You know this. You never play a ground of golf where you get everything in your bag well. There's always one piece missing. I said, if this Florida team ever gets right, hits all their clubs well, this team could win by 10 points. Instead, they were 16-4. DeAndre Daniels made those three-pointers, and they tied it and went ahead. And at halftime, Scotty Wilfkin, who was famous for his walk-off threes at halftime, missed the shot that would have given Florida another 2 points. And at that moment, we should have known something was different. And the second half was all UConn.
We are doing a recap of the Gators basketball season. I know it's been a very tough pill to swallow. And you are on the radio airwaves down there in North Central Florida, WOCA. What kind of feedback have you been getting from the listeners all week long? Are they lamenting?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much heartbroken. And I think but there's a great sentiment, too, of appreciation for Billy Donovan. The ride that he took people on this year. And in our town, of course, I'm in Ocala, which is just 35 miles in Gainesville. And Billy Donovan comes here a lot to Ocala and does his tip-off club meeting. And he's very close to this community in Ocala. And people in Ocala are extremely fond of him. And I must say that he's done more for our city than any three coaches, including my friends, Urban Meyer and Steve Spurrier, have done in all the years. Billy Donovan is a superb person. He's a great popular member in our community, and I think he had a wonderful run. And really, to be honest with you, despite the outcome, I think Billy did his best coaching job in 18 years.
We'll be right back. EWC, YSR, much, much more with Buddy Martin, the host of the Buddy Martin Show on WOCA in North Central Florida. We will be right back. Okay, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, taking you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. And I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, having a candid conversation with one of our dear friends of the program that has joined us many, many times, and that is Buddy Martin from WOCA Radio in North Central Florida. Does a great job on the Buddy Martin Show. Buddy, and before we went to commercial break, we were just highlighting just so many of the things that Billy Donovan has done, the success that he has had within that program. I want you to expound some more, but before we get into that, let's step back for a moment and reflect on the remarkable run and the national championship for UConn's Kevin Ollie. I mean, he's a product of the program. He entered into his first Final Four as a head coach, and I have to tell you what, watching that game, seeing him up and down the sideline, he didn't look a bit nervous at all. He had no trepidation. He was ready to go, and that's probably that NBA experience.
Well, I think his team reflected his calm demeanor, and I think he knows what his team is about, and he understands that losing to Louisville like he did by a zillion points at the end of the year didn't mean that much at that point in time. It looked like the end of the world for UConn, but I think he knows you only have to be the best team in March to win the championship, and this team played at a high level. with confidence. And I think guys like Shabazz and Napier is a reflection of Kevin Ollie's personality. And so, and if you look at what's the pregame and the exchange between Billy Donovan and Kevin Ollie, they're obviously very, very strong admirers of each other. And Ollie said earlier in the week, I'm a big admirer of Billy Donovan because they both run the same kind of programs. They're both high quality men and they're both excellent leaders of young men. And I think that's reflected in the way UConn played on the court. I think they got a real gem in Kevin Ollie up in Storrs, Connecticut.
You know, buddy, I think you summarize it so well, just the way Kevin Ollie conducts himself. And I've said this before in our program. I've had many times and opportunities during my time with the Thunder to interview Kevin Ollie when he played up there. And just I knew that he was a coaching in the making, but an awesome role model. And he's the kind of guy that if I had a son that played basketball, college basketball, and our boys are going to be golfers, but I mean, he's the kind of guy that I'd want him to play for. I mean, just a phenomenal person and coach.
I love the way he's embraced Jim Calhoun.
Oh, yeah.
Who UConn is.
Yes.
You know,
and good point.
What do you mean we're Cinderellas? We're UConn. We do this. It's in our DNA. And I love the fact he's embraced the history of the school, and Husky fans have got to be really thrilled not just for winning the national championship, but to know their program is in good hands for a long time.
Well, let's go ahead and put into perspective what Florida's Billy Donovan has done. I had mentioned 18 years at Florida. What a remarkable run. What has been the key for him at a football school to turn this program around and get it trending consistently in the right direction? I mean, two national titles, four Final Fours, and that 30-game winning streak. It was incredible.
Well, first of all, he never let the football school thing bother him. I mean, he knows what he's done there in Florida. And basketball, he knows you don't have to draw 84,000 people to have a successful basketball program. Their attendance has been up recent years. He builds a program based on play. I think it's a wonderful story how he coached the team this year. If you go back and look at him when they lost December 2nd up in Storrs to the same UConn team on a putback by Napier, a rebound by flip out by Daniels.
Right.
I mean, that was he got to remember Scotty Wilbekin was hurt. His backup point guard was hurt, and he had some issues. At one point this year, matter of fact, Alyssa, he didn't have enough players to scrimmage. That's when he got the manager, off the team and got him playing. Actually, the guy played some minutes, valuable minutes for him. So, he did it last November. That program with injuries and problems with ineligibility was really scraping the bottom, and he brought him back in a way. And I think he's proudest of that fact and where they came from. To win 30 games, remarkable. He didn't win the big one, disappointing. But like he said, there is no easy exit from the tournament when you reach that point.
Well, it all starts at the top with that leadership, that incredible basketball IQ. Of course, he's a product of Rick Pitino's program and is certainly now regarded as one of the most respected coaches in college hoops. I think one of the things that sets him apart, and perhaps you can talk about this, buddy, since spending time around him, he is a workout fanatic. I understand that he works out 6 days a week. Is that true?
Yeah, I hear that, too. I'm not in the gym, unfortunately, with Billy. I couldn't tell you. But no, Billy.
Come on, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I'm behind that. I need to get on that part of my life too. But Donovan. I mean, Donovan. I know it's a cliche to talk about a coach in glowing terms, but I just think he's such a selfless person. He really. What I love about him, he says, "Look, I'm not against one and done. If that's what it takes, I'd rather not have a player come here who didn't want to be here. If you don't want to play here, you'd rather be in the NBA." I'd rather you go someplace else because you're not going to be happy here. And look at his four seniors. You know, Patrick Young could have come out the first year, and according to Donovan, could have been a lottery pick then. And he delayed that. And the great thing about this team, it was the polar opposite of the, what does Calipari call it now, succeed and proceed program?
Mm-hmm.
Is it polar opposite? They had four seniors. What teams have four seniors anymore? Almost none.
That's true.
And I think the fact that represents something I think is good about college basketball, because let's be honest, that people say they're going to get their degree in college, but they really, most of them do not. Believe me, I know. I left my final 11 hours at Florida, went to work in newspapers with the idea of coming back to get my degree, never got it. So you want those kids to stay in school. You want guys who want to be in for the long haul. Plus, by the time they get out of Billy Donovan's program in 4 years, not only better basketball players, they have a degree and they're better young men.
You're listening to the voice of Buddy Martin from WOCA Radio in North Central Florida, host of the Buddy Martin Show. And so my other question is, do you ever see Billy Donovan wanting to take his game to the next level, to the NBA? We've heard the rumors all week long, you know, about perhaps a potential opening with the Lakers at the end of the season. And could John Calipari, could he fill that spot? Could he be a potential candidate? I mean, what about Billy D? I mean, could this happen for him too?
I don't think so. He did say when he signed his new contract, by the way, extension 3 years, a couple of months ago, that he never will rule out the NBA because he might still want to try it someday. But in terms of where he is in his life right now, with his young family, his lifestyle in Gainesville, remember he had a cup of coffee, not even a cup, a spoonful of coffee in the NBA when he signed up to be the Magic coach after 24 hours, backed out.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that he'd made a mistake. So I'm not saying he can't or won't ever coach in the NBA. We're going around about him going to the Knicks at one point in time. There's always that name out there someplace. There's a Lakers position. In my mind, Billy Donovan knows right now he's a college basketball coach who'd probably like to try it someday. This doesn't seem to be the right time for Billy Donovan to coach in the NBA.
Well, the temptation definitely there. One of the elite coaches talking about Billy Donovan, a great motivator, a great fundamental coach. We're going to transition now. We have got to get the pulse on the Florida Gators. And, oh, my goodness, Buddy Martin, they better be a whole lot better than they were in 2013. Give us a sense of how things are unfolding with spring practice. You got the big game. What on Saturday?
Yeah, and see, I don't like to call it this because I still always call it the orange and blue game. But they've named it the Orange and Blue debut. I hate that name. On Saturday, and it'll be this fall. It'll be this Saturday coming up.
Uh-huh.
And the best thing that ever happened to Gator football in an off year like this was the Gator basketball team winning 30 in a row because they've been under the radar. All the media hasn't been there much, so they'll get their first look. What in terms of what they're looking for? Jeff Driscoll, of course, is the trigger man. He's the guy Kurt Roper says is the future of the program. They've still got to settle on their running back. Looks like Kelvin Taylor will be the guy. They said yesterday or this week that they're looking for another corner to play opposite of Vernon Hargraves, and they have a disparity between the first and second teams on both offensive and defensive lines. They don't have backups they're happy with.
Well, Will Muschamp, head coach, I mean, he certainly prides himself defensively, but they have got to clean up some things offensively as the Gators finished 112th in the nation in scoring offense last year. So we're looking forward to some more offensive observations from you, Buddy Martin. You take care. You get on that treadmill, okay? That's important, right?
Oh, boy. Now you're on my back, too. Buddy.
I know. Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, we got to step aside. Much more straight ahead all this right. weekend at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway with our next interview, we want you to join us online at Twitter, at @eRadioSports or eRadioSports.com, because it is time for the fastest 2 hours in radio as we continue. We're going to head out now to the National League Central. We're going to get the scoop on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and it has been a while, but very big expectations on the Pirates this year. What they may be able to accomplish this season. Of course, manager Clint Hurdle, they have their sights and their goals set very high. We all remember well last season, that very strong finish, winning 94 games. In fact, they ended that 20 consecutive years of losing records, beating Cincinnati in the NL wildcard game before losing to the Cardinals. And I know tonight they are playing the Brewers, but this evening we're going to welcome in Steve Zients. He is the sports editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Since 2003, he's a big-time Pirates fan, and he has a new book that we're going to be promoting this evening by our good friends at Triumph Books. It is titled 100 Things Pirate Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is Steve's first time on the show. Good evening, Steve. Welcome aboard.
Good evening, Alyssa. I appreciate you having me.
Well, we appreciate you joining us on a Friday night. So we want to get your insight and a scout's take on this year, because I know there is a ton of optimism and very high expectations on perhaps what might happen as the season unfolds. And that all happens when you have those strong runs like the end of last season and advancing to the playoffs. Tell us about it. What's your expectations?
Well, I actually predicted them to fall back just a little bit, maybe 88 wins. Certainly not going to be another losing season like we endured here for 20 years. And believe me, those were, for a lot of people around here, those were the dark ages. But even though they didn't make a lot of changes since last year, and they lost A.J. Burnett, they lost Marlon Byrd, they lost Justin Morneau. Those were all big parts of the run to the playoffs last year. I still think that their pitching is strong enough that they can do some damage in the Central, as they showed last weekend when they took 2 or 3 from the Cardinals.
It's interesting you bring up the point. This is a team that is loaded with a lot of talent, not a ton of changes that took place. And I think one of the best parts when you really zero in on the Pittsburgh Pirates is their farm system. I mean, it's strong and it's percolating with a number of up-and-coming, some very special players. Would you agree?
I would. The expectation this year is, when is Gregory Polanco, a right fielder, going to arrive? He's had a great start at Triple A Indianapolis, and I think that most everyone expects to see him here sometime in June, maybe July. But I think that he will make his debut at PNC Park this year.
Steve Zients, the sports editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and not a ton of change that has taken place with the Pirates, but they did lose some offense from last season. Do you believe that they will score enough runs to compete against the Cardinals or even the Reds?
I'm not sure whether they're going to be able to score enough, but I think, again, with the pitching staff that they have, they're going to be able to stay in the games like they did last year. They're going to be able, as they did against the Cardinals last week, even though they had an aberration, that we're calling it around here, a 12-2 win on Friday night, they come back on Sunday and win a 2-1 game, getting a really surprising start from Edinson Volquez, who was their off-season pickup, big off-season acquisition. He was just a revelation to see what he did Sunday afternoon, after having such terrible years in Cincinnati, in San Diego, and then a terrible spring with the Pirates this year. Nobody was expecting what he gave them on Sunday, which was 5 2/3 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 4 strikeouts. I don't think he walked a batter. If they can get that from him, they will be a team that will be able to hang around, and I think they'll score enough with McCutchen, with Alvarez, with Neil Walker, with Martin, to be in a lot of games, more games than not this year.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we are zeroing in on the National League Central. We're getting the scoop on the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're talking about some offense, but what about re-signing left-handed pitcher Francisco Liriano? I mean, he really has been just such an ace. I mean, his stats say it all. He puts away hitters. Now, he had surgery, right, that Tommy John surgery. How's he doing?
He's doing great. In fact, he was the surprise of last year. Mm-hmm. I think people now, after seeing what Volquez did on Sunday, they're saying, well, is he this year's Liriano? Because Liriano was the revelation last year. Nobody knew what to expect from him. He was coming back from an off-season arm injury, and he goes out and basically pitches his way into being the ace of the staff, pitching his way to earning the start in the wild card game, which was the biggest game around here in 2 decades. And he came from nowhere, didn't start the season in the rotation because of the injury. And by the end of the year, he was the one that everybody wanted out there on that big night against Cincinnati.
Steve, would you agree with this? I mean, some say that, Francisco, that he's had some difficulty in terms of being consistent throughout his 8-year career. Do you agree with that?
I know he had some consistency issues in Minnesota, but we didn't see any of that around here last year. And through his first 2 starts this year, we haven't seen any inconsistencies. I mean, I don't know. Ray Searidge, the pitching coach here, is getting a lot of credit for making adjustments to his delivery. And for what it's worth, I mean, he was the comeback player of the year in the National League last year. I think that speaks a lot for consistency issues and for what he means to the Pirates.
Well, let's talk about another guy that means a whole lot to those Pittsburgh Pirates and what the ace of the staff, Gerrit Cole. What's your impressions of him and what he has been able to do?
He has been electric. He has been everything that you would want a number one overall draft pick to be. He came in June last year, came in with great expectations. He didn't shy away from them. He grabbed the chance by the collar and he ran with it. I mean, he won his first 4 starts last year. No Pirate pitcher had ever won his first 4 career starts in almost 100 years. He captured the imagination of the fans. I think he captured the imagination of his teammates. I can't recall a Pirate pitcher coming through the system like that and gaining the confidence of his teammates as quickly as he did. He's picked that up again this year. If there's any evidence of a sophomore slump, well, we haven't seen it yet. But again, it still is only April.
Author, sports writer Steve Zients is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Here in just a moment, we are going to talk about his new book that is out, 100 Things Pirate Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And it is interesting. I reflect on one of my conversations earlier with the Pirates Director of Player Personnel, Tyrone Brooks. And one of the things that we had talked about on our show was the relief pitching. I mean, the Pirates showed last season just how far you can go when you have a lockdown bullpen. I mean, that really is a strong point for them, too.
Oh, definitely. And I think that the rest of the major leagues realizes what the Pirates have. The common belief around here is if the starter gets you six innings and the Pirates have a lead, they're not going to lose it. Because you start with Tony Watson, you start with Justin Wilson early in the seventh, eighth innings. You go to Mark Melanson, you go to Jason Grilly. I mean, those guys are lights out. Tony Watson earlier this week, it was almost headlines when he gave up a run. He hadn't given up a run in 20 some innings dating to last year.
Wow!
And I mean, he's just been lights out, as have the rest. And really, I think that's a credit to General Manager Neil Huntington. He's been able to put together bullpens from spare parts, for the most part, other than Wilson and Watson. Jason Grilly had been around. Melanson had been around. Genmar Gomez, who is their long man, he's sort of their swing guy in the middle. He had been with a few teams before, so... Neil Huntington has been able to put that together, and Ray Searidge has been able to use it most effectively.
Well, I'm glad you bring up General Manager Neil Huntington and even Manager Clint Hurdle. I mean, both these guys, the news out that they extended their contracts, a three-year extension, so that's huge. Quickly, we are out of time. Just tell all the listeners where they can go and pick up a copy of your new book, 100 Things Pirate Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
Okay, it's available at the Post Gazette online store at store.post-gazette.com. It's available at select Barnes & Noble stores and also at Amazon.com.
Well, it's a wonderful read, the ultimate resource guide for true Pirate fans. Thank you so much, Steve. We were short on time. We definitely want an extended invitation and have you back again real soon. Okay, Steve?
I'd appreciate it, Alyssa. Thank you very much.
You bet. Much more straight ahead this evening at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Yes, welcome back this evening to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, always extending an invitation to all of our listeners across the nation. You can join us at Twitter at eRadioSports and eRadioSports.com. Well, right now, it is time to relive some memories of an American icon, one of the greatest athletes of the 20th century. 2014 marks the centennial of Joe DiMaggio. Birth year, and his illustrious career certainly has been well documented. The owner of 3 MVP awards, 9 World Series rings, a league record 56 game hitting streak, and Jolton Joe did it all, and he had it all, including a larger than life persona and a tempestuous marriage to Hollywood golden girl Marilyn Monroe. And that is where our next conversation is going to take us, as we are set to have a candid conversation with Tom Clavin. We're headed to New York. He is the longtime contributor to the New York Times and author of his new book. It is titled The DiMaggios, Three Brothers, Their Passion for Baseball, and Their Pursuit of the American Dream. Good evening, Tom. It is such an honor to have you with us tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to be talking to you.
Well, congratulations on the book, because it is not just about solely Joe DiMaggio, but it is really a dynamic portrait, and you really did a great job of just framing just the life of all three of the brothers. Tell us about it.
Thanks. Yeah, well, it is a story about family. As you mentioned in the intro, Joe DiMaggio's life has been well documented. But what hasn't really been explored before is that he was one of three brothers who played in the major leagues. And Dominic being the younger brother, Vincent the older brother. And they weren't just brothers who were hanging around baseball because their brother Joe was a superstar. They were good ball players. I mean, all three players combined played on 22 All-Star teams. And that's really not, you can't find that in baseball elsewhere. I mean, brothers who played together, sure, but brothers who played with such great consistency and batting average and runs scored and everything like that. But the book also talks about what it was like off the field, where the DiMaggios came from, how they got into baseball, what their lives were after baseball, you mentioned Marilyn Monroe. What was the impact on the entire DiMaggio family when she entered the scene? So the book is, yes, it's about baseball, and people like baseball will enjoy it, but it's really a lot of ways a family story that goes takes place over a century.
Well, it is a compelling read. There are a number of fascinating revelations in it, and it really is the great American story of three brothers. And I thought it was interesting, you talk about in the book that there have been more than 350 sets of brothers who have played in major leagues since the 1870s. But have brothers ever had the skill or the charisma or just the success of the DiMaggio brothers? Anyone that could compare to?
Not really. I mean, some people of a certain age will refer to the Alou brothers, Felipe, Jesus.
Okay.
And they were Matty Alou. They played in the 1960s and 70s, and they were good ball players. But you know, they collectively did not play. They were not the stars or the accomplished ball players that the three DiMaggio brother was. What we're seeing right now in baseball is you have the Molina brothers. Yadier is the catcher for the Cardinals, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, like, the DiMaggios, all three brothers were center fielders. You now have three Molina brothers in Major League Baseball who are all catchers. Again, you know, will they get to that level with between the three of them, 22 All-Star teams? Probably not.
Tom Clavin is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And so we're talking about these baseball-playing brothers, and I want to learn some more about two of the other brothers, of course, with Joe DiMaggio. Dominique, he was not a slouch. He was, a seven-time All-Star center fielder for the Boston Red Sox from 1940 to 1953. Just tell us about him, and was he similar in terms of the personality with Joe?
He was similar in the sense that both he and Joe were shy, but whereas Joe, many people found him unapproachable, Dominic was very approachable. He liked to interact with the fans. He liked to interact with other ball players. He was just a gentler, more accessible kind of guy. And as a ball player, he was probably a better center fielder than Joe was. He covered a little bit more ground.
Really?
Ted Williams, who played next to Joe, Dominic in left field. He was very quick to credit Dominic because Ted was an average left fielder at best. So Dominic had to cover not only center field in Fenway Park and visiting ballparks, but a portion of left field, too. He was also a different player than Joe. Joe was the guy who batted third or batted cleanup. He was the RBI guy. Dominic was the leadoff batter for those great Boston teams in the 1940s. He was the guy who got on base, and then he would be stealing bases and breaking up double plays and being driven in by the likes of Ted Williams and Bobby Doerr and Rudy York and some of those other ball players. So Joe and Dominic were very different on the field, a little more alike off the field.
Well, now, Dominic, of course, I just mentioned, he has seven-time All-Star center fielder, but he batted over 300 five times in his career. And he was like, I guess, his big brother in the fact that he rarely struck out.
He did. He was a good contact hitter. You know, Dominic had more base hits than anybody in the major leagues in the 1940s, with the possible exception of Stan Musial. And he was a very good ball player. And like I say, a good center fielder, like you said, a seven-time All-Star. He probably, you know, it's interesting, both Joe and Dominic lost 3 years of their baseball careers because they were in the military service. Joe was in the Army. Dominic was in the Navy. Now, it didn't affect Joe as far as becoming a Hall of Famer. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Everybody knew it. Dominic, you know, having missed those years when I think he was like 24, 25, 26 years old, when he was averaging about 200 hits a year, that probably cost him the Hall of Fame. He always expressed he never regretted it, that, you know, military service was more important to him during the war than baseball playing. But, you know, Dominic, there's a good argument to be made that if it wasn't for those 3 years, Dominic would be in the Hall of Fame.
Tom Clavin, with us this evening at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Which brother, was it Vince or was it Dominique, that really was instrumental in terms of helping out Joe with his career?
Well, Vince, you know, you could say that if it hadn't been for Vince, we never would have heard of Joe DiMaggio. When they were growing up as kids in San Francisco, Vince had this powerful passion for baseball. He had to play baseball. Joe was kind of ambivalent. You know, he didn't care one way or the other. In fact, if he was going to do anything professionally athletic, he wanted to be a tennis player. But Vincent kept pushing him, and the opportunity came where Vincent was playing for the San Francisco Seals, and they were looking for a ball player to help finish out the season. And he went to the manager and said, "Hey, my younger brother Joe, he's not that bad. He probably can't hurt us. Why don't you give him a chance?" And so they put Joe on the team, and he did okay, nothing great. And then they brought him back for the second year. with the San Francisco Seals, and that was the year that everything fell into place, and he hit at a 61-game hitting streak and became the star of the Pacific Coast League.
Okay, now, Tom, you have to share with all of our listeners tonight. I thought what was interesting in the book, you were talking about Vince, just how passionate he was about the game of baseball. But his father thought it was a frivolous sport and that he should be a fisherman to make more money. And so he ran away from home and earned $1,500 in cash. I mean, come on, tell the story.
Well, yes, Giuseppe DiMaggio thought playing baseball was a waste of time and it took you time away from his sons. They should be out in a boat catching fish and making real money. And Vince, he did. He ran away. He was gone for a couple of years. He came back. The father confronted, and the rest of the family confronted him when, in the kitchen of their home in San Francisco, and where you been? And Vince took $1,500 in cash and put it on the kitchen table and said, I made that playing baseball. And Giuseppe DiMaggio, you know, wide-eyed, stared at that, and then he turns to Joe and he says, when are you going to start playing baseball?
Oh, that's incredible. Hey, we are talking about, we're highlighting the new book that is out. It is titled The DiMaggio's Three Brothers, Their Passion for Baseball and Their Pursuit of the American Dream, with a well-known writer, Tom Clavin. Tom, for all of our listeners tonight, where can they go and get a copy of your book?
Well, I'm a big fan of supporting your local bookstore, so you should be able to find it there, certainly at Barnes & Noble and other chains that are out there. And obviously, you know, more and more these days, people turn to the downloads that you can get from BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon. So it's out. HarperCollins is the publisher. There's plenty of copies out there, so people shouldn't have too much trouble finding one.
Okay, so the DiMaggios, they really became the first family of baseball. You were talking about the boy's father, but what was their relationship like with their mom? And it wasn't just also, let me add this too, it wasn't just the three brothers. I mean, the DiMaggios, they had nine children.
There were nine children. Giuseppe and Rosalie had emigrated from Sicily and came to the San Francisco area, and Giuseppe on a fisherman's pay, which was certainly not much, but he and his wife raised nine children, and she was, you know, she was not the boss in the family. You know, it was very traditional, and Giuseppe was the boss, but she, in ways she could, she encouraged her sons to play baseball, especially Vincent and Dominic and Joe. She saw baseball as a way for her children to become more Americanized, and she wanted that. She wanted them to pursue the American dream that she saw that was out there. And becoming baseball players was part of that pursuit of the American dream, never foreseeing, of course, that one of her sons would become, you know, one of the great ball players of all time, and that she'd have three sons that would all make it to the major league. That was beyond anybody's imagination. But she was supportive of them, and she wanted them to play baseball because she thought it was a way that they were going to become American citizens, not just legally, but really embrace America and all that it represented to an immigrant family.
Okay, it's titled The DiMaggio's Three Brothers, Their Passion for Baseball and Pursuit of the American Dream. What an honor to have you with us tonight, Tom, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods, straight from world-famous restaurants, right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
All right, guys, so check this out. Have you ever heard of Goldbelly? Okay, so it's this amazing site where you can order the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants all across the country, and they will ship it straight to your door. That's right, these guys will ship you Philly cheesesteaks from Jim's or Pat's in Philly, Buffalo wings from the Anchor Bar in Buffalo, and even Kansas City's most legendary barbecue. So if you're looking to host an epic Super Bowl party, go to goldbelly.com and get free shipping and 20% off your first order with promo code GAMEDAY.